Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. We've got so many mailbag questions. I'm not even sure if we're asking people to send them in anymore because we get so many. It's just like an overwhelming deluge constantly. I love it, and we're going to get to a ton of them. But first, I feel like the last 24 hours of NBA craziness, we just kind of have to break it down, don't we? I mean, we had the Knicks going nuts. We had Jabari Parker suffer his second ACL. I mean, among other headlines, like, where do we even start right now?
I think we have to start with the Knicks. Then we could talk a little Bucks.
Oh, my God. Are you serious? You're just in a depressed mood, aren't you?
No. Look, it's absurd what's happened with this franchise over the last, like, 96 hours. Because it started with Phil's tweet about Melo, and the Oakley thing took it to a whole new level. And so let's just jump in. Billy Bringus. This is where the Knicks are. Billy Bringus says, F the mailbag. We need 2 straight hours clowning this franchise. And I don't have the energy to talk about the Knicks for that long because it's just like, what do you even say at this point? Like, when I watched the Oakley stuff unfolding last night, it was just like, well, shit. Like, this is the Knicks. I don't, like, every Knicks joke has been told, and yet they continue to get more and more ridiculous.
Yeah, well, it was funny because we spent the last podcast kind of defending Frank Isola and his role in the LeBron rumors, and he really came through in the clutch. Not only was he at the police station waiting for Charles Oakley to be released, but then he ended up writing a column saying that it was basically the lowest moment of the franchise's history that he could remember. And that's not like you. I think you said he was on Troll Rushmore or something like that. I don't really feel like that was a troll statement. I think he was like just head in hand after a long night saying, this is really the bottom of the abyss.
Yes and no. On the other hand, this is like, this story was made for Frank Isola. There's no reporter in America who is more deserving to be in the middle of Charles Oakley at the Midtown police station. He's perfect for this. And the reason I would put him on Troll Rushmore is because he's constantly stirring the pot, you know, like he's never just playing it safe. And I loved it. I mean, that's why he was the first one to get the Oakley exclusive.
Yeah. I was going to say though, didn't this pot kind of stir itself though? I mean, Oakley is standing up with basically a semicircle of security guards surrounding him in all directions. Like if he had wanted to flee, there was nowhere to go.
You've got
the guard and denizens slowly understanding what's unfolding. And there was just never a moment when I watched that video where I thought, oh yeah, cooler heads are going to prevail here. Definitely. This is going to work out just fine.
My favorite part of that, and it was actually from Isola's story, was the detail that he took off his watch and gave it to a friend before everybody came over. As in, like, that's a veteran move, knowing that something is about to go down. And Oakley was clearly not prepared to back down. And yeah, man, the whole thing. I mean, like, I was sitting there going through, like, there was Zapruder footage, like, different angles from the crowd last night. You could choose from, like, 6 different Twitter videos to see step by step as things escalated. I think, can I just say, as if we're talking about clowning this franchise, the number one reason to clown this franchise is that they are pressing charges after all this. They're pressing assault and trespassing charges against Charles Oakley. Trespassing.
Yeah. You know, we had talked about it recently, how what would it happen if like the Malice in the Palace happened in today's NBA environment? I mean, this wasn't quite that, but boy, it was pretty close. I mean, it was on one part sad because you never want to see someone public in that manner kind of disrespected. And I think ultimately, like, this entire thing was very disrespectful to Oakley, regardless of what he said. The way it was handled was just purely disrespectful. But it was also just kind of enraging too, wasn't it? Like, we're kind of laughing here, but isn't a part of you just like disgusted and angry?
It was definitely a bad look for everyone involved. Although, I mean, Oakley, I feel like the internet sort of rallied around him last night, and that's fine because Oakley is like the realist. I don't know any true basketball fan that doesn't like Charles Oakley. Doesn't really make sense to me. So I mean, like, he's gonna have universal support regardless, but like, I think everybody was probably a little bit out of line with the way this all happened. It just, to me, speaks to how paranoid and insecure the Knicks management is. I mean, it's all Dolan. Like, this is all so characteristic of the way he's run the team for the last few years.
How about that press release? I mean, that was just despicable. And
that's another thing. Yeah. Like, to call him out for having a drinking problem, like, that to me is just such a like classless move. And then what I don't even know what they said today.
Yeah. I mean, it was just basically saying that everything that Oakley has said in interviews since then was a lie, and that there was tons of security guards who all witnessed his behavior, and kind of digging in a little bit deeper. I mean, I thought Chris Paul handled it pretty well on, I think it was his Instagram account, kind of said, you know, this, you know, he deserves better. No one should be kind of portrayed that way.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of whatever personal problems he has, there's no reason to put that into public
100%.
As sort of a defense of your organization's actions. I mean, that's just so below the belt. And I understand everybody rushing to Oakley's defense, like you're saying. I mean, the free Oakley stuff was very predictable, I think, especially in light of the current political climate. You know, I'm not a real big, like, violence for violence sake guy.
Right.
So I'm not saying that he's, you know, without fault here. But
in light of the current climate, though, I definitely support, yeah, Charles Oakley as the face of the resistance.
Yeah. I guess here's my big problem with it.
Okay.
If the Knicks could have done it over, would they have done anything differently? I don't think
that's
they would
a
have.
Really good
I think
point.
That they would have done exactly the same thing. They would have dug in, just like you're saying, Dolan style. I don't want this guy at my arena, so get him out of here. I don't care if it's going to involve physical force and violence and embarrass a franchise legend. Get him out of here. I don't care if there's going to be this racial overtone to everything. Get him out of here. And by the way, we're going to press charges and we're going to tell everyone he's an alcoholic. I think that they would have handled all of that just the same.
God, and that's such a good point. That's problem number one, is that the Knicks don't realize that there's an issue here with any of this.
And I think, you know, unfortunately, Oakley is probably just as stubborn and he probably wouldn't do anything differently, but I can at least sympathize with him, right? Like, he was probably just watching the game. Maybe he said something, maybe he didn't. He did pay his money and he did give a lot to the organization. And obviously there's years of bad blood there over how they treat him as sort of an alumni. But it's just really sad that, you know, we just expect more from our people in power and our leadership positions. And oh man,
yeah,
like, James Dolan, you got to do better than that. And do you think he's sorry at all? Like, don't you think Adam Silver probably gave him a phone call today and he was like, look, man, like, we really screwed this up. We can't have this play out publicly. And Dolan's like, what are you talking about? What happened?
Yeah, I was curious because Adam Silver was apparently at the game. And you gotta think that Silver's sitting there thinking, how can we take this franchise away from James Dolan? Because it's just such a bad look for everyone. And he's displayed, like, not only has he not gotten better over the years, he's gotten worse. So I feel like at some point there's gotta be a breaking point.
It was sort of like the Comic Sans letter from Dan Gilbert came to life, you know? And it was just like played, yeah, out as like a small one act play in the middle of Madison Square Garden with all the celebrities around.
That's true.
What a joke.
That's a good way to describe Dolan. Like, the Comic Sans letter was a real low point for Dan Gilbert in terms of his managerial style. But Dolan is that insecure and that short-sighted in everything he ever does.
Yeah. Well, I told you he lives for the night. I mean, and I think he lived for the night again. And we can surely buy his album on iTunes soon.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Couple more questions here about the Knicks. The one big question is the way this affects, like, their reputation among players. I mean, obviously Chris Paul, Dwayne Wade, LeBron all sort of stood with Oakley today. But Glenn from the Philippines asks, how does Phil think he's getting free agents to sign in the future? Melo has flaws, for example, but overall he's a decent guy. So that was even before this Oakley mess. But it's a good question. I think, like, a lot of people, Reggie Miller came out and said, like, why would anyone ever sign with this team, seeing stuff like last night play out? And then Phil with his, like, cryptic tweet earlier in the week about Carmelo, like, I mean, they don't treat their former players well. They don't treat their stars well. Like, I mean, free Porzingis? Like, I don't know what the conclusion is here.
Yeah, I think that this whole Oakley incident finally kind of cut through the hazy, pompous approach of Phil Jackson and really struck a chord with him, because he tweeted today, and it wasn't even an apology, but it was kind of a borderline apology. He wrote, "So after starting a firestorm with my misunderstood tweet, I offer this to our society as torn with discord. I'm against it. Let it be." So now he's sort of trying to almost like play the victim and use the political environment as an explanation for how he came at Carmelo Anthony.
How disastrous his management has been.
Yeah,
sure.
And it's like,
I like that you, I was wondering whether you were going to read the emojis in the Phil Jackson tweet. To be clear, he says fire emoji storm, and then I offer this peace sign.
Yeah, no, it's just a joke. And it just shows again how much he doesn't get it, and how I think also he probably underestimated the backlash. You know, I think he's been needling people and in a position of, you know, monster leverage for most of his career as a coach. He's in a completely different role here in New York with completely different responsibilities. He's hid from the media all season long. He puts out this idiotic tweet going at Melo, which everybody read through instantly. And then you have this giant player versus organization clash in the middle of the arena when he's also engaged with the player versus organization clash with Carmelo Anthony. I mean, the parallels are stunning. And he realized, I think, finally, through the hookah cloud smoke, that he's on the wrong side of history here, right? Like, I don't think he wants to be with Dolan against all of the players in the NBA, do you? I think he thought he was, like, doing this really clever dance and this cute Zen stuff he's been doing forever, and he just realized that he's the man, like, the capital M man that he spent, like, 40 years protesting against.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, Phil, it's really tough to try to read his inner thoughts. I think at this point, his actions, like over the last couple of years, speak for themselves in terms of his lack of competence. And, you know, to answer this question, I don't think the Oakley thing necessarily affects the way the Knicks would be perceived in free agency. Yeah, maybe it does. Maybe it does. You might be right. But I think, in general, it's overblown when people start to worry about what free agents will think. Like, guys want to play with good players, number one. And number two, guys will want to play in New York if there are good players there. So it's generally not an issue. I think that, like, there have been a couple examples over the past few years. I think the Philly thing was pretty real. I think that people didn't want to play in Sacramento. And I wonder whether people would want to go to a place like New Orleans. And I do think that now, over the last year or so, the Knicks have become so toxic in the way they've handled Melo, the way Dolan sort of hovers over the franchise. Like, I do think that it's beginning to get real in terms of the way people perceive New York. Like, I mean, like, Courtney Lee was pissed off like 2 weeks ago and complaining pretty openly. Like, the Derrick Rose thing has been a disaster. There's a lot of sort of cautionary tales there.
Yeah, look, the results speak for themselves. Guys like J.R. Smith and Shumpert find immediate success in Cleveland once they leave New York. Look at last summer's moves from Phil. Utter desperation. Trading for Derrick Rose, that's bottom of the barrel desperation. I mean, no question about it. Paying Joakim Noah more than $70 million, which is probably about 10 times more than he's worth as a free agent, utter desperation. To talk yourself into a post-surgery Brandon Jennings when he hasn't been sent the same guy for 3 years, and even Orlando, of all teams, gave up on him, utter desperation. And that's where they're at. And why would that turn around thanks to this scenario? Of course, it's just going to make it worse. And the guy I feel really bad for always is Porzingis. I mean, he didn't really sign up for this. It's not like Hornacek, who kind of made a deal with the devil, and he acknowledged that this week. He kind of said, like, yeah, people warned me about it, but whatever. Like, he had free agency to do what he did, and he decided to hop back on, you know, a really screwed up horse. Poor Porzingis. I mean, welcome to America, Kristaps, you know?
Dude, that was my favorite part of the video, because the initial video started with Porzingis at the free throw line, and then you see him craning his neck And then it pans to Oakley surrounded by like 8 security guards. And it's like Kristaps is peering into the future. And it just felt so bad. And it's like, somehow we need to get this franchise away from Dolan. Now, one thought I had today is that my dream for LeBron James, since he's not going to he's probably not going to be able to win 6 titles, but I think that if he could leverage his way to New York on the condition that Dolan steps aside, he could go down as the greatest player of all time.
Yeah, I mean,
take down James Dolan and that's how you beat MJ.
Yeah, I mean, you could just see Porzingis, like the wheels turning in his head as he's shooting that free throw. He's thinking like, wow, if I can put in 10 solid years with this team, there's a chance I'll be hauled out of the building by security.
Yeah, exactly. Are you just going to ignore my master plan for LeBron,
though? No, it was one of your zanier ideas. I do like the idea of like, you know, an NBA commissioner-led intervention into the ownership situation. I mean,
yeah,
that was a David Stern special. So I think Adam Silver needs to make a call to his old boss and say, look, we've got a real delicate situation. And Stern will nod, and you won't even have to really explain what the delicate situation is because everyone in New York will know. And Sir can kind of, you know, come through, maybe try to act as a go-between and get that. But
yeah, we should note that I feel like we've been having these talks and these dreams about like the NBA stepping in New York for like 20 years. So who knows how realistic any of it is. But one more Knicks question. Ben Eagle asks, do the Knicks have the best international scouting in the NBA? # Hernan Gomez for MVP. So there's a silver lining. There are 3 good young international players on the Knicks. And I do think that they should probably just fire everyone else associated with that franchise. But it's not all bad, you know?
Yeah, but they're not the best. I mean, Denver is definitely ahead of them. So, sorry, New York. Even in this super obscure subcategory, you're not even close to winning the gold medal.
Yeah, okay. All right, so next question. AJ asks, should the Bucks try to make a trade to shore up some depth? Or is this addition by subtraction, i.e. D. Rose injuries with Chicago? I don't actually know what addition by subtraction means with regard to Jabari, but you just wrote about Jabari's injury. So why don't you talk a little bit about what it means?
You know, I'm going to come across really, really bleak. Like this is going to be the Knicks of podcasters.
Yeah,
this is horrible for them and it's terrible for him. And everything I said about Zach LaVine in terms of the bad timing of the injury, it applies even more to Jabari because, number one, they're going to take it slower with his recovery. So they're saying he's not going to be back until next February. But he was eligible for an extension this summer. He could have potentially cashed in $110 million this summer on his next contract. Now he's going to have to come back next February, play for like 2 or 3 months, hope that he can look good, and then try to test things in restricted free agency unless the Bucks decide to do some sweetheart deal with him. I mean, that is so much guaranteed money gone on one non-contact play. And that's just, it just makes my stomach sick to think about that. It's like you're going to cash in a lottery ticket and you get hit by a bus on the way to the store. You know what I mean? It's just awful.
Yeah, no, it was awful. That was my thought, is that this is the LaVine injury, except worse, like for everyone involved. Because it also, like, the Bucks have really been struggling lately, and now this injury kind of throws it puts an asterisk next to a lot of what happens the rest of the season. And I don't know if that's good or bad. Like, I feel like this final 2-month stretch would have been a good time to evaluate what you have with Jason Kidd, what you have with this sort of nucleus, especially now that Chris Middleton's healthy, and now everything's on pause for another year.
Exactly, and actually more than a year probably, because you got to get him back up to speed. And it really took 2 seasons, you know, coming into this season for Jabari to kind of look right.
Yeah, you're right.
So now we're pushing this back to the start of 2018 and 19. And the really sad part to me is Milwaukee's core guys, like I viewed their core trio as Giannis, Middleton, and Parker. They didn't play a single minute together this season. You know, they played one game together. Middleton came back, but he wasn't on the court with those other 2 guys at the same time. So if you were going to make this big push into the playoffs, and they still could theoretically, where does it end up though? I mean, the whole point was to get Jabari those reps to kind of see if their offense would hold up and see how things look with these guys, and to build momentum into the next season. You know, that's all gone. And then you also look at the number of changes that they've undergone since his first injury. I went back to read my piece after his first injury, and the yeah. key decisions were Brandon Knight and Larry Sanders.
Wow.
So Brandon yeah. Knight got traded. He's gone out of the picture. Poof. And Larry Sanders retired from the NBA. Also poof, but a different kind of poof. So,
yeah.
I mean, a lot can happen in like 2 years, right? So where is this franchise even going to be? Yeah. And you can't just kind of spin the wheels here and count down to when he comes back, because there is no real precedent for him coming back at a high level. I mean, the only other guys who have sort of had two ACLs in recent years, Michael Redd, and that basically ended his career. He was later in his career after he was 30. And the other guy is Josh Howard, and same thing, the second one basically ended his career. So the best case scenario is Jabari Parker is like an unprecedented comeback story. Like the first guy, the first like big time double ACL guy who happens early in his career, and he really still manages to be amazing. That's like the best case scenario. How realistic is that? And if you're the Bucks and you're trying to make your decisions here, not only before the trade deadline, but even over the next 12-month period, how much can you really count on Jabari still as one of your core guys? To me, you have to start hedging against that, because you don't necessarily know if it's going to be him. And here's my final point here, and I made this point in my piece. It's sort of like the Bucks went from being like the 2011 Thunder to being the 2017 Thunder. Like, they skipped all the good times with the guys growing up and Durant being amazing and everything. And they went straight from they went straight from being the promising young group, the NBA's next big thing. Potentially, they went straight to like Giannis is Westbrook, and how do we find anything to put around him?
You're killing me. That is heartbreaking to think about. I should also add that I was in complete denial last night when you texted me about the injury.
Did you notice how nice I was, by the way? Like, I didn't dig in. I was like, I hope you're right.
Yeah, I was like, no, man, I watched the video. It's just a sprained knee. It's fine. It's just hyperextended. Can you please explain your duck experience this morning?
Okay, so here's the thing. And again, I'm not making light of the injury at all. But I was, even before it happened, I was already nervous that we had jinxed the Bucks by putting them on the cover, by having Giannis on the cover with Lee Jenkins' story. Because like before that, they were cruising. They looked like they were going to win a playoff series. I was all in on them. Since that cover, like the SI jinx just completely took them apart. And they were like 4-13 after the cover. And I was like, oh my God, this is our fault. So then I'm walking in a duck park yesterday, just doing my thing. And I happened to see a duck with like basically a broken leg, and he's walking out towards traffic. Like, he's not going back to the pond where he should be. And it's just me and this duck face to face on this trail. And I mean, the symbolism was just overwhelming. I was just sitting there looking and like, this is a horrible omen. Like, the only thing that could be worse is like a bear about to eat me, but like a hobbling.
Only you would look at that duck and see Jabari Parker.
Okay, so just a hobbling duck on one leg. I was like, this is clearly the sign of something truly awful. And I mean, a few hours later, the prophecy was written.
A few hours later, you were making that heartbreaking Thunder analogy. So yeah.
Exactly.
That was the strangest string of text messages I've gotten in a long time, and I really appreciate it. So,
but I sent you the picture of the duck, so you can vouch for the fact that it happened.
Yes. Let's move on. Austin Lords asks, there was photo evidence of the duck.
Quote unquote.
Austin Lords asks, with all the crazy headlines recently, LeBron, Bulls, Melo, what is the most underreported interesting midseason development?
Man, do you have a good answer?
I think that Kawhi turning into an absolute monster on offense has gone like a little bit underreported. Like, I think everybody understands that Kawhi is a great player, but like his numbers over the past month are like Durant of San Antonio. He's averaging 36-4. Over the past 30 days, and like he's kind of carrying that offense every night.
And you just love the Spurs, so I mean that's big praise from you.
I'm not like a crazy Spurs enthusiast here, but I do think that he showed some limitations in the playoffs last year that might not be there anymore. And I think people won't really start paying attention until he's in a playoff series and doing this, but like, there's definitely been progress there.
Yeah, that's a great one. I had a tweet that just showed like how his scoring has been increasing since his rookie year, and every year it's gone up. And it was kind of, and I jokingly had it just continue to go up until he was averaging like 53 points a game when he was like 33 years old.
Yeah, that was a really solid Golliver stat a couple weeks ago.
But the question is, when does he really hit his ceiling, right? Like, what's his ceiling as a scorer? Like, 2 years from now, if I told you he's averaging 32 a game, would you be shocked? Like, or would you be like,
eh. Yeah, and that's what's crazy to me is that I definitely thought that he had hit his ceiling. And I thought we were kind of looking at like, more of a Paul George guy where he is a number one option who would really be best as a number two option. And now he's just a full on number one option.
For sure. I mean, there's a couple ways I could go answering this question. I think that's an awesome answer. I mean, there's also just sort of the perennial overlooked stories, Memphis and Utah. I think they've got to be in there. I think also Miami's run has started to get a little buzz. I have no explanation for it really at all.
Yeah.
So I think that's got to be in there. And then, you know, another team that's not like quite doing what Miami's doing, but sort of is Dallas, where they were dead, like in the coffin dead. And now they're sneaking in potentially to that race for the eighth seed. So
the thing I kind of put an asterisk next to Dallas, just because the eighth seed is just, so like every team involved there is pretty bad. And so potentially winning that eighth seed race is kind of not, I wouldn't consider that some kind of triumph. And I also think that like it's counterproductive for the Mavs to be winning this year. Like they should be looking toward the draft. And that's been true for a couple years with them. But at this point, like, I just don't understand why they keep doing this.
No, I guess, like, to be honest, I agree completely, and I feel the same way about Miami. So
yeah,
this was not like, oh, congratulations. I just think it's gone kind of underreported.
Yeah, that's fair. All right. Morgan Hunsaker, speaking of underreported, could you guys spend any less time talking about the Jazz? They are the fourth seed in the West. Morgan, if I give Ben an opening to talk about the Utah Jazz, this will quickly turn into a Utah Jazz podcast. We have another question about Derek Favors, one of Ben's favorite topics. Aaron asks, Derek Favors having a letdown season in terms of stats, is he helping the Jazz in less obvious ways? So look, I'm going to give you 2 minutes to talk about the Jazz here.
Look, first of all, I have a funny Jazz story. At least it was funny to me. So I go on local radio, like probably more than I should all across the country. I just kind of, I don't know, for some reason I find it fun to do. And the Utah stations have been calling up. And invariably, when you get a Salt Lake City radio station, the first question's always about the Jazz. I mean, I've been doing this for like 5, 6, 7, 8
years. Yeah, of course.
Always about the Jazz. And so I'm always kind of joking like, oh, ha, ha, ha. Do they even know there's 29 other teams, you know? So I go on a couple of days ago, and the first question is, LeBron James wants a playmaker. Are the Cavs in trouble? Like, it just like Cleveland paranoia and hype. And I'm sitting here as the question's like coming out, and I am like blown away. Like, holy cow. Like, I can't believe they're asking me a general NBA question and not for like just generic praise of the Jazz, or Gobert's an all-star, or yay, Gordon Hayward, is he going to re-sign, right? I am blown away.
Mm-hmm.
So I give like a pretty extended take on Cleveland, how, hey, let's not go overboard and panic. LeBron's right. He's playing too many minutes, so on and so forth, right? But then there was a gigantic plot twist that I did not see coming. The entire point of the first question about the Cavaliers was so that they could set up a, is Shelvin Mack the playmaker the Cavs need? What can the Jazz get back for Shelvin Mack in a trade follow-up? And
wow.
I have not been blindsided like that on live radio. I can't even remember how long. Like, I was like, wow, Utah, that is, even for Utah, that is like so impressive.
So did you call them out for
it? Oh, no. I tried to play it off. I mean, I'm sure there was like 15 seconds of dead air as I was like, duh. Like, I hadn't even considered sure. that Shelvin Mack is going to be the Warriors killer in the 2017 finals. But let me like pull myself together right. here. So, Morgan, tune into local sports radio. They definitely have you covered on the Jazz Talk. Now, in terms of what we think about the Jazz, I think there's actually a pretty good explanation for why we haven't talked about them a lot. And it's the stability factor. Like, they've had a million injuries. Yeah. Guys are in and out, but they've just been winning at a very steady professional pace, right? Like, if you're not going on 15-game win streaks or 10-game losing streaks, you tend to get a little bit lost in the shuffle of some of these other disasters like the Knicks, or even within their own conferences, teams like the Blazers and the Timberwolves, you know, because, you know, stable is unfortunately not the best for podcasts. So yeah. Rest assured, Jazz fans, we like the Jazz.
Yeah, we do. We do like the Jazz. I even enjoy watching them, particularly when they play good teams, like watching the way they match up defensively and some of the guys they'll single out is pretty entertaining. I would say two things. I would like to request a moratorium on the nightly Jazz tweet saying, like, displaying their record when George Hill and Gordon Hayward are healthy.
Okay.
Because literally I've been hearing for 3 months, like, the Jazz are 10-2, the Jazz are 18-4, the Jazz are, like, I get it that they are a different team when those two guys are healthy. I'm not, like, somebody tweeted they'd be on a 68-win pace when George Hill and Gordon Hayward are healthy. They are not that good when those guys are healthy. So they're somewhere in between. I do think that they will be pretty entertaining in the playoffs. Like, I hope that they stay in the 4 seed because I'd really like to see them match up with the Warriors. That would be a kind of a fun second round series. And beyond that, I think we're hitting the upper limit of Jazz talk for this podcast. But beyond that, I do think they have some interesting questions. Like, I don't know what they do with George Hill this summer.
Well, yeah, they have a lot of choices to make. I was actually writing about some of those decisions in terms of like Rodney Hood's potential upcoming extension. I mean, when you start ranking their guys, I mean, I think, you know, Hayward and Gobert to me are sort of 1A and 1B. But after them, if you're trying to build that core, you probably put Hood over Favors now just because of Favors' injury issues. And, you know, his age lines up a little bit better than a guy like Hill. But you sort of need all of those guys to keep this momentum going because Exum's not ready yet. So you can probably pay Hayward this summer. You could probably pay Hill this summer. You know, Favors might end up being sort of the odd man out if you pay Hood on his extension, which would kick in the following year. I mean, it gets pretty dicey for them to sort of keep all these pieces together. It's sort of like a Boston West almost. You know, we were talking about some of their challenges in roster construction. When you have a bunch of younger guys all coming up at the same time, eventually it gets really expensive to keep them together.
Yeah.
But hey, here's one idea I want to throw at you real quick. You mentioned the possible, you know, Jazz versus Warriors playoff matchup. And coincidentally, on a Utah radio station, they basically had me go through every possible matchup for the Jazz in the playoffs. And I think the most chaotic one would be Jazz versus Rockets, because there's a pretty good chance the Jazz could beat the Rockets in a playoff series. And then how does that just completely smoke every narrative? Like, that is just an atom bomb to NBA narratives.
Yeah. So it's funny. I had that side comment about watching them match up with guys. The two teams that I've watched like the entire game of were, one, I watched them basically dare Russell Westbrook to shoot jump shots for the entire fourth quarter. And Westbrook was making them. And they still were just like, screw it. Like, we're gonna see if you can hit these 18-foot pull-ups. And they lost that way, but it was awesome watching how disciplined they were. And then the other game I watched was like, they just kicked the Rockets' ass. It, like, 2 months ago, probably. And it, like, Gobert was all over the place. Harden could not do anything. And granted, like, the Rockets were on the road, and the Rockets have been a better team for a lot of this season. But I agree with you, man. I think that if it were Houston, Utah, I would probably take Utah.
And remember, like, Mike D'Antoni had his day when the Warriors won the title and Alvin Gentry was like, D'Antoni was proved correct. Well, if D'Antoni and Harden get knocked out by the Jazz, that is going to shred that idea in the minds of many people. And it's going to resurface all the D'Antoni ball doesn't work in the postseason conversation. So, I think that's kind of what I want. Hey, I have another question here from TK. And it's more broad. He just wants to know, did you guys see Devin Booker's comments about Troy Daniels after the fisticuffs late in that Memphis Phoenix game? And if so, you know, whose side are you on? Are you basically team Booker or are you team Troy Daniels? Did you see what Booker said?
I did see what he said. He said, who is this guy talking trash to me? He's been on 5 teams in 3 years, right?
Yeah, exactly. I got to say, I was offended by what Devin Booker said. I was outraged by Devin Booker's comments. It made me think back, kind of actually digging into my old Blazers memory bank, but a few things. Number one, Troy Daniels had an unbelievable game-winning three-pointer for the Rockets in the 2014 playoffs. So this is not just some scrub who's bouncing around crappy teams like the Suns for 3 years. Like, he actually has he has postseason reps. On the play where he hit the game-winning three-pointer, Harden stumbling around, falling down on the ground. He pitches the ball out to Jeremy Lin, of all people. Jeremy Lin finally finds Troy Daniels, and Troy Daniels saves the day. Chandler Parsons gives him a gigantic hug after he hits the shot. I mean, so that's how long ago.
I remember that game. Right? Yeah.
So that's how long ago Troy Daniels has been relevant in the NBA. I mean, Chandler Parsons was still in Houston. Jeremy Lin was still in Houston. James Harden was still falling down in the playoffs in Houston. So this is not a complete no-namer. Troy Daniels is having a pretty impressive and effective season for Memphis doing what he does, which is shoot the three-pointer. Okay. So that's one piece of it. The second piece of it is just, and this goes back to a Marcus Camby saying, which I've always loved. I think Marcus Camby really has two gigantic contributions to the NBA. The first is the back, the high five with the back of your hand so that you prevent germ contamination and spreading. If you hit the back of the hand, it's much more hygienic. That's number one. And number two is the phrase, respect these years. And that was like his catch-all statement as a veteran of basically just like, you know, respect these years, show your older teammates and your older opponents more respect than maybe they even deserve. This was an ultimate respect these years situation. Who is Devin Booker? Devin Booker's never been to the playoffs. His team's terrible. They just got killed by the Grizzlies. It wasn't like he was serving up Troy Daniels all night with like 40 points. He was in high school when Troy Daniels is hitting game-winning three-pointers. To me, this is just an easy D. I'm just on Team Troy Daniels. No questions asked.
Okay. Can I ask you something? You kind of lost me. What was that thing about handshakes? And was it hand sanitizer or something?
Okay. You got to pay attention to these stories.
who was the respect these years guy?
Marcus Camby.
Okay. Marcus Camby. All right. I support Marcus Camby. And yeah, you know what? I actually agree with you a little bit. My reaction to that was that, like, you know what? I really like Devin Booker. I had fun talking to him earlier this year. And he's really sort of turned a corner over the last like month or 6 weeks or so. That said, you are not in a position to say anything with the Suns being what they are. And granted, like, I understand that Troy Daniels has been on 5 teams in 3 years or whatever, but like, you're a second year player and your team is awful. So chill out a little bit. I'm definitely, I support all manner of trash talking, but on that one, I was less team Booker than it seemed like the rest of the internet was.
I'm shocked. This is the most surprised I've ever been. I thought you were going to come back completely defending your kid and you didn't.
Nah, man. Nah. All right. Let's take a break here for a second. And then we got a lightning round. But first, today's podcast is brought to you by Movement Watches. MVMT watches. They were founded on the belief that style shouldn't break the bank. And with over 500,000 watches sold to customers in 160 plus countries around the world, MVMT watches has solidified itself as the world's fastest growing watch company. So Ben, you have a Movement watch. Tell us about your experience.
Well, it's great because watches are really hip right now. I mean, you're seeing Damian Lillard, Isaiah Thomas, John Wall. They're all kind of pointing at their wrist during the fourth quarter to kind of show how cool they are. You know what's even cooler than that? Pointing at a real watch that looks good. Movement watches, they've got those for you. $95 price point, $400 to $500 style. It just looks that nice. Go ahead, tap your wrist, show everybody how cool you are. And really, you know, check out the Valentine's Day deals too, right?
Yeah, Movement watches are a solid adult accessory, a great adult gift. So get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to mvmtwatches.com/floor. Perfect Valentine's Day gift. There's literally 100 watches on there that you can choose from. So now is the time to step up your watch game. Go to mvmtwatches.com/floor.
And they always have like gift guides on their website. It's real easy to navigate. It's smooth, just like the watch itself. Nice and logical. mvmtwatches.com/floor.
All right, let's get back into it. I have a lightning round set up here. So
good. So I've been telling some long stories today, so I'll chill out.
we're going to limit each answer to 60 seconds for the next 10 minutes. So first question is from Dr. Funkenstein, a tremendous Twitter name. After the Pistons fought their way back against Boston with Reggie Jackson riding the bench, he comes back in, dominates the ball, and throws up junk on two critical possessions down the stretch. When I first read you being critical of Reggie during/after the playoffs last year, my instinct was to defend him. Not anymore. This isn't a mailbag question. I'm just so sick of Reggie Jackson. Do you see any way for Detroit to get better at point guard? What do you think?
This guy sent this to me after I really unloaded on Reggie Jackson for his ridiculous post-game comments about the officials after they lost game four. So I highly encourage this as a use of my DMs. If you want to rant about your team's favorite player, please. I loved it.
Absolutely.
I don't see a way for them to really get better. You know, we always talk about teams being stuck in the middle, you know, the treadmill of mediocrity. And I think that Detroit is stuck on the treadmill of mediocrity with their point guard. If they want to try to get off of his contract, they could probably take back a similar point guard or a worse point guard on a shorter deal. But I don't see any real avenue for them to upgrade. And I think we're actually about to enter an era here where, unless Jackson has some crazy resurgence, we start to think about this as like Kentavious Caldwell Pope's team. And that, I love him as a player, but that's sort of a kind of a frightening thought.
Totally. I would only add that I feel your pain, Dr. Funkenstein, as a Reggie Jackson fantasy owner. He's really starting to swoon these days. And this is the team. These are the types of teams that should really think about tanking. Because if the Pistons lost an extra 5 to 10 games, they would be in a good spot to pick up a point guard who actually makes sense. But anyways, this is a lightning round. So we will move on. Trey House says, Pels equal tire fire. Save AD. Best offers for AD? What Godfather offer would it take? Chris asks, what about Anthony Davis? What about sending the 2017 and 2018 Brooklyn picks along with Smart and Crowder? Wouldn't that propel Boston ahead of Cleveland and put New Orleans on a fast rebuild? I think we should put a moratorium on Anthony Davis trade offers because he's as untradeable as anyone in basketball, and it's just not ever going to happen. That's sad because the Pelicans are pretty much a tire fire, but the certain hypotheticals are just too ridiculous.
I have to strongly disagree. I'm fine with all Anthony Davis trade rumors, except if it's related to the Celtics. Okay, I can't take both ridiculous Celtics offers and ridiculous Anthony Davis trade offers in the same conversation. So we have to at least settle for just one half of that. That being said, I don't see him being traded anytime soon. And you're also conveniently forgetting to mention that the savior is coming, most likely. Jahlil Okafor is going to be there to turn the whole thing around.
Yeah. When I heard that they were trying to trade for Jahlil Okafor, that's when I became convinced that like we need to free Anthony Davis somehow. And the Pelicans really have no idea what they're doing. But so it goes. Next question. George says, after choosing Kaminsky over four first rounders and trading for Plumlee's contract, make me trust the front office again. It's okay if you can't. I understand you're not a miracle worker. I can't make you trust the Hornets front office, but I should be noted that the picks that they would have gotten in that Boston draft or from that Boston trade were not like they didn't turn out to be that incredible. Like they would have had last year's Brooklyn pick, which would have been what, like Jaylen Brown or Chris Dunn. It just like, I think from a process standpoint, that's what made that so insane. And the Plumlee deal, pretty indefensible. I don't know, man. Like the Hornets are another underreported story that they're sort of like in a darker place this year.
Yeah, falling apart completely. I mean, the defense for trading for Plumlee is that the guys they traded him for weren't working out. And yeah, they were being honest with themselves that they weren't going to be able to find anybody in free agency. So if they had to fill the hole, might as well do it with a quote unquote known commodity in Plumlee and not get stuck with nobody given their cap situation in the summer. That isn't a compelling defense of it. That's not an explanation for it, but that's, yeah, I think, what they were thinking. And when you're in that spot, you have bigger problems. You know, that's like a side effect of the bigger issue, which was expectations got too high. Their core guys weren't quite good enough and they're super thin up front. And yeah, you know, anytime Cody Zeller is off the court, they're hopeless. And that's not great either. So I'm not really shedding a lot of tears for the Hornets, to be honest. I never really liked the Hornets, even when they were good or fun. I mean, I feel bad for Kemba, but I'm not that worried about it.
Yeah, it's tough. The Hornets are definitely in like the no man's land of the NBA right now. Although, you know, the odd Kemba Walker game winner thrown in there is always fun. So maybe we can root for that at least. John Paul asks, has there been too much hate on Austin Rivers? Has he, quote unquote, turned the corner? I think there may have been too much hate on Austin Rivers, but I now think that we're getting pretty close to too much love for Austin Rivers, because he's not that good. He's like a version of Malcolm Brogdon that makes $11 million a year.
Yeah, I was going to say he can't be underrated because he just got paid a lot of money. So,
well, and also a lot of people are currently calling him underrated, and again, like he's a solid like 7th or 8th man.
I will say this. I absolutely crushed the Clippers for trading for him. And I just basically went right at Doc's throat, said that, you know, this is like an abuse of power. You shouldn't be trading for your own kid. It's nepotism. I mean, I played every card there was to play. The trade doesn't look that bad. And they kind of need us. And I do kind of worry, though, like if Blake leaves or Chris leaves, and if they can't pay Redick, who's really an important piece for them, the Austin thing could look worse. Like the decision and the concept of re-signing him to the number that they did could look a lot worse next year. But in terms of, you know, where he, you know, his compensation as a backup guard, it's pretty fair and he's solid. He's been solid. I mean, he was kind of solid towards the end of last year too.
No, in some of those playoff series, like he gives them useful minutes. But I just wouldn't read like too much into it.
He was also really, really bad when he came in. So like saying that he was terrible when he was 19 and 20 is not like some hindsight is 2020 thing we need to like take back. Like he was awful and he's gotten a lot better.
Ziku asks, how did you guys not mention Beal injuring Shumpert with the nastiest step back of the year? That's on me. All right. Ben gave me 25 minutes to talk about the Wizards and somehow I didn't mention that, but it was definitely a highlight of the Wizards Cavs experience.
Look, Ziku, I already do enough references to my own tweets on this podcast that I can't just read every single one. I tweeted the video. I think that should be sufficient.
One day we're going to have a podcast where you explain how you rip the videos because it really is pretty impressive.
Compelling. That'll be great audio.
Really, really compelling. That'll be an August podcast. All right. Kieran Did not have a question, but did hit me up with a screenshot of the correct pronunciation of Goran Dragic. Oh, there. I think you I just mispronounced it, up, it again.
So two things. First of all, I know the right way to say it. It's Dragic. Okay.
Okay. Thank
but
you.
The second thing is I've screwed that up my entire life that I usually just call him Goran. And actually I lied. There's three things. The third thing is it was driving me insane the last podcast when you screwed it up like 14 times in 10 minutes, but I was doing such a good job of controlling myself. And now I have to admit to you that I actually created this dummy account under the name Kieran to send this in.
Great. Great. Kieran from Scotland. Shout out to you. I will do my best to not continue screwing that name up because it also has been more than just last podcast. Like I've been doing that for several months now.
I just love that we're getting corrected by Scottish people on pronunciation. I mean, they can't pronounce anything.
Yeah, good point. Jonathan asks, is Draymond really a top 10 player? If you swapped him with Keith in Washington or Amir in Boston, what would the finals matchup be? I think put Draymond in DC and the Wizards would still lose to the Cavs. But I do think he's a top 12 player. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I forget exactly where we had him. It was top 15 on the top 100.
I don't think he's a top 10 player.
Yeah, it's tricky because you have to have a system that utilizes his passing. Like he could go completely useless in some offenses if you have super ball dominant guards. You know, I'm not naming any names for those two teams, you know, Isaiah Thomas and John Wall. But like if they're not going to have an approach to like, you know, pumping up Draymond's role, his value is a lot less. I think if you did those swaps, though, that team for sure makes the Eastern Conference Finals. Like they're the clear cut number two in the East.
That's true. That's true.
So that'd be the difference.
Yeah. Tyler asks, the Rockets are 7-8 in their last 15 games. Is this a midseason swoon or sign of something larger? What do you think?
Well, they were playing so radically different that there was going to take a while for people to kind of catch up, you know, and that happens. Like look at the Lakers kind of. I mean, same thing happened. Like once the book's out on you, you're going to have to prove that you have more than just one trick, you know? And
yeah,
I think some of it's regression with their shooting. Some of it was the schedule is much more difficult. Some of it's just, it's hard to sustain super high level play. If you come out of the gate so strong for 2 months, almost unrealistic except for the very best and deepest teams to kind of keep that up. And look no further than our friends, the Raptors for evidence of that. I'm not necessarily that worried about the Rockets, but I do think that they were kind of punching above their weight class a little bit early.
I think that's the correct analysis. I feel like there were certain people who looked at them as like a legitimate threat to the Warriors and one of the three best teams in the West. And I just don't think they're quite on that level. And now they're regressing to about where they should be. There's a part of me, though, that feels like this is just how parity works. And like the NBA is now has more parity than ever, aside from the Cavs and the Warriors. And this kind of feels like the NFL season where like you'll have teams pop up and look really good for like 4 or 5 weeks. And then suddenly they'll start to regress. So the Rockets are maybe like the NBA version of the Vikings, where they're like good, but they're not as good as they looked for the first 2 months.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to start worrying about Houston once Harden goes like two solid months without a 50-point triple-double. If he does that, then okay, sound the alarm. For now,
also, NBA version of the Vikings, the Vikings sucked for the final like 6 weeks of the season, so the Rockets are not that bad. They should be fun in the playoffs, but again, I'd pick the Jazz. So speaking of the playoffs, Noah Kravitz asks, should the NBA change the way it seeds the playoffs? I'm sure that you have a take on this one.
Oh yeah. I went all out about this a couple of years ago when the West was much stronger than the East. And I continue to be a Western Conference elitist, so much so that I may or may not have shot off a text last night after the Kings beat the Celtics to a reporter in Boston that simply read Celtics would be strong 7 seed in the Western Conference. I don't think this year the imbalance is actually that bad. And you know, KD to the Warriors almost takes that away too, because if you had one more really strong team in the West, like the Thunder, if they're a real contender, and let's say the Clippers could stay healthy, I mean, that's four or five teams in the West that are probably better than anybody in the East besides the Cavs. And that would be really glaring. You know, without that, with the consolidation at the top, you know, it's a little bit less obvious. I don't buy any of the logistical arguments. Oh, it's so hard to travel, blah, blah, blah. Like, they could figure it out if they really cared. I just think there's so much institutional pushback to changes to the playoff format, and so much random blind loyalty to this geographical system, which really makes no sense.
You're describing me, okay? I'm not a fan of reseeding the playoffs, mostly because I hate change. And to me, it would feel like less of an event if the finals were two Western Conference teams. The one thing I would be in favor of is, like, if you made it like the NCAA tournament, where there was a seeding committee, so you kind of like records factored into it, but it, like those random years where, like, last year, I think the Raptors won like 55 games, right?
Yeah.
Like, you could have a committee come in and say, look, the Raptors are good, but they're not this good. And then knock them down a few pegs.
You're going to Canadian exchange rate their win total?
A little bit. I think it would be really entertaining from a fan standpoint to speculate about the seeding committee. And then you could also rig it so that, like, you would still have, even though the Spurs are currently better than currently have a better record than the Cavs, you could still put the Warriors and the Cavs on both sides of the bracket. And so there would at least be a chance that you would still get an East-West finals. And mostly I would be all in just for the committee conspiracy theories.
Well, we know who would most strongly lobby against this. It'd be the same guy who you want to steal the Knicks, and that's LeBron James. I mean, his legacy has benefited from the conference disparity more than, I think, basically anyone ever.
I kind of disagree, because I think that on the one hand, it's true that he's gotten to the finals more, but then people, when they compare him to Jordan, constantly knock him for his record in the finals, and the teams that he's played are much better because the West is so strong. And they're just much better than anybody Jordan ever dealt with at that stage.
I feel you on that. But his counter to all the people who say 6-0, like myself, is going to be, well, LeBron made 14 straight finals, right? And that's going to be like the sort of go-to stat for his dominance. And that is inflated. I mean, there's no way he's making as many finals in a row if he has to go through the West bracket, you know, facing the Spurs every single year, facing these new Warriors, facing the Clippers and Grizzlies and all these other teams that have had, you know, consistently quality, clear identity type of teams. There's no way he's doing it that many times in a row. It's just not going to happen. So
that's,
I hear
true.
What you're saying. He gets too much grief for his finals losses, but he doesn't get enough grief for how weak the East is and how it's kind of like pumped up his ability to get to the finals.
Who was Jordan beating, really? I mean, he was beating, like, those Reggie Miller Pacers teams.
Every Hall of Famer. Took down,
all due respect to Charles
Magic.
Oakley's Knicks team.
Let's see. Magic, Ewing, Barkley, Stockton, Malone. That's just to name a few.
All right. I can't tell whether you're being serious in terms of juxtaposing those teams with the teams that LeBron has played. But I'm talking about in the East. The East was even weak under Jordan, is my only point.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I don't know. I mean, I was talking more about the overall, like, scope of his titles in terms of who he beat.
Maybe.
I mean, he did make pretty quick work of the teams within his conference, but then he also didn't need a game 7 in the finals. So I think it was just Jordan was better than everybody. I mean, we could probably
That's
have like an
point.
Hour-long conversation, and maybe we should. Maybe that should be like an off-season episode where I'll stand out for MJ. And you can just try to poke every possible hole in his legacy, and we'll see how it stacks up.
You are a secret MJ stan. It's something a lot of people don't know about you. But let's move on here.
I've actually got one. Here it is. It says, Kayla, if you could bring back 5 retired players and they could be on any team in the league, who would you bring back? And then she adds, just so you guys know, I'm a weekly listener. And she's referring to the fact that she's a woman. Love the show. And, you know, we had joked about how we don't have any female listeners. I got to say, I love all the female listeners who basically wrote in and might have just invented questions as an excuse to write in just so that they could tell us that they're female. You are my favorite listeners.
For real. Shout out to Kayla. Did you come up with an answer for this one?
No, I didn't even really want to answer. I just wanted to kind of brag that we have females listening to us.
I did come up with an answer.
Okay, bring it on.
Because it dovetails with a project that I'm working on for tomorrow on Sports Illustrated, and we can talk about it next week. But five players I would like to see. Rasheed Wallace, number one, mostly because I just like Rasheed. Also because I think his game would be a perfect fit with where basketball is right now. Bill Russell, because I think that Bill Russell is overrated and I would like to see him come back and be kind of average in today's NBA. Hakeem Olajuwon, because again, like, he would be amazing in the current style. Baron Davis, and then I couldn't really come up with a fifth, so I just threw it Barkley, because it'd be interesting to see how Barkley's game would fit in today's league. And Baron Davis, because Baron Davis was the shit, and I feel like he was kind of underappreciated.
So I've got another one to add to your list that's really obvious that you definitely should have thought of, and that's Charles Oakley.
Yes, I did think of Oakley.
Let's put him on the Knicks right now.
Sure. Mix it up.
Okay. I liked your choices, but I think Bill Russell's right there with LeBron in terms of guys who wouldn't have been able to do what they did if they were in the harder Western Conference.
Yeah, well, Bill Russell, I was specifically trolling you with that selection because I feel like you probably have him, what, in your top five all time?
Yeah, definitely up there. Yeah. Maybe it's close. I mean, LeBron's got an argument, a pretty strong argument against him. But yeah, he's for sure way near the top.
All right. Final question. You get to build the ultimate slam dunk contest for this year's All-Star festivities using a time machine to bring any three men from NBA history to New Orleans. Who you got?
Okay, so I was going to try to basically start as many arguments and debates as possible, while also paying homage to the history of the slam dunk contest, which I happen to care very deeply about.
Yeah.
So I want 24-year-old versions of Dr. J, Michael Jordan, ooh, LeBron James, who wimped out and never did it, and Vince Carter. So I want to basically solve the Michael Jordan versus Vince Carter question, because everybody always debates what was the better dunk contest between the two of those, 1988 or 2000. I want to solve that question. I want to see what LeBron can do. I want some LeBron versus MJ debates. I want Dr. J versus MJ as sort of like carrying the torch of, the dunk throughout history. And I want them all basically at their athletic, an even playing field, 23, 24 years old, and to see who really can do the best dunks. And also I want to give them 2017 knowledge. In other words, of like, you can have downloaded onto their mental iPads every dunk contest dunk that's ever been done, so that they have to kind of come up with whatever the best thing that they can do is. So we're not seeing actual 1988 Jordan. We're seeing like 88 Jordan's body with the knowledge of you can dunk over a Kia or you can dunk over a mascot on a hoverboard. That's what I want.
That's a solid field. I completely forgot about Dr. J, but throwing him in there over Dominique Wilkins is a good call. Because I feel like Dominique was more of a power dunker, maybe. I would add James White. Have you ever seen his dunk contest highlights?
Well, look, I saw James White in a real dunk contest in person, and it was
so did I. Like,
it was like 30-year-old James White. Remember when he had the Knicks cheerleaders out there, and basically, Flight White's flight got canceled because it was like one of the most biggest disappointments in dunk contest history. So if we can get young James White, then yes.
That's what I'm saying. I saw James White in a dunk contest at 17 years old at George Washington University at an AAU tournament. And he was amazing. And he's the only guy I've ever seen that could touch Vince Carter. So if you have no idea who this is, you should go on YouTube and watch James White highlights. I also have no idea who the dude from the Phoenix Suns is in this year's dunk contest. So I hope he's like the new James White. But yeah, James White, Vince Carter, Michael Jordan, Julius Irving, and that would be pretty fantastic. Can I finish up here?
Yeah, that is the deepest cut I've ever heard, though, that you saw 17-year-old James White in a dunk contest. That, look, like, I was under the impression that he was like 40, so I didn't even know you were old enough to do that. I'm impressed.
Dude, I've been a basketball nerd for a long time. I was actually at that tournament to watch Anthony Roberson, who then I think matriculated to Michigan State, or maybe Florida. Anyways, it's a great day. Great way to spend a Saturday. Final note here. Did you see the article about Draymond Green and Kevin Durant this week?
I did.
So
more mind games.
Let me just read this excerpt. Sources told ESPN that Green, trying to use reverse psychology, intentionally and aggressively approached Durant with a bevy of choice words during a break in Saturday's loss to the Sacramento Kings. Green's premeditated approach sparked a verbal spat that lasted roughly 30 seconds. FU obscenities were repeatedly tossed back and forth by both players. Durant was enraged. Sources said Green, knowing he had accomplished his goal, began winking and smiling at some of his teammates and coaching staff. It makes me so happy.
Well, I was like trying to do this by going off on Devin Booker about half an hour ago, but you didn't fall for the bait. Like, I thought you were going to be like KD and start swearing back at me, and I was going to be able to like look around my empty apartment, winking and nodding at my imaginary friends.
Really lock in for the second half of the podcast?
Yeah, but you just brushed it off. Well, this is like one of those things where everyone has really gotten into like, oh, he's not playing checkers, he's playing chess. You know, that's like the whole thing in like politics coverage these days. It's like, well, he did it for this reason. No, he did it for this grandmaster reason. I mean, isn't it just possible that Draymond Green started swearing just because that happens basically every single day?
It's entirely possible. And for anyone who didn't listen to our podcast like a month ago about Draymond Green's what was it, conversion therapy?
No, I don't know exactly what we called it, but basically he was trying to shot collar Kevin Durant into not taking bad shots late in games.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm glad that this has continued, and I think you might be right that Draymond Green is just kind of an asshole to everybody. But nevertheless, I would read there are like 50 different reporters in Golden State. I feel like somebody should just be assigned permanently to the like, what is Draymond doing to Kevin Durant beat? And then we could roll all those columns into a book at the end of this season.
Look, in all seriousness, these are breadcrumbs that you think are not a problem right now, especially if you're the Warriors and you're cruising on top of the world. If they get into real strife in the postseason, if they don't win the title this year, there is going to be blowback for this stuff. I mean, we laugh and brush it off now, but Draymond versus KD is going to absolutely be a story if they lose and they have any sort of a late game issue in like game 3 of the finals or game 2 of the Western Conference finals. And they proved last year that they're not like, you know, impervious to internal drama. Like, they've played it off very well this season. Like, oh yeah, you know, we moved on, we didn't point fingers. Like, if Draymond finds himself in the midst, of another intra-team kind of turmoil situation here, are they going to be as forgiving the second time around? I mean, they kind of gave him a pass on the below the belt punch, right? Like, how many passes are they going to be willing to give Draymond before everybody kind of turns on him? I'm not saying that's going to happen. I still think Draymond's a top, 10-12 player in the league. He's personally like one of my favorite guys to watch. If I was starting a team, he'd be very near the top of the list on guys that I would want on my squad. But this kind of mind game could backfire in unintended ways down the road. That's all I'm
saying. Yeah. Let's put it like this. The Warriors are so good right now that there's honestly not that much interesting about them, but this is something that could be interesting. And I look forward to tracking Draymond's psychology experiment for the next 3 or 4 months, because it should be good.
Yeah. And they did just lose to the Sacramento in a game that went to a clutch situation and they didn't have answers. So
yeah. All right. Well, that's it. I got to go watch the end of Duke Carolina. But this was fun. Thank you for the questions. And we've got some others that we'll get to next week. And yeah, we'll be back Tuesday.
Yeah. Hey, everyone, just keep sending the questions in. We really do appreciate it. There's just so many. We're trying to get through as many as we possibly can. That's why we went lightning round fashion. And also, don't forget, please support our sponsors, MVMTWatches.com/floor. Buy a watch off there. It helps us. It helps you. You're going to have a great watch. MVMTWatches.com/floor. Andrew, I will talk to you next week. Take care, man.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.